When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, culés. Welcome to Barça Talk. I'm your host, Gabriel Quiroga, here in the Spanish capital. In today's episode, we review last night's performance against Atlético de Madrid. Before getting to the episode, I want to talk to you about Magic Mind, the world's first productivity drink. If you're looking for a great way to keep your energy steady throughout the day, Magic Mind is a great way to help achieve that. With Magic Mind, you can ditch the third, fourth, or even the fifth cup of coffee and stay alert and focused throughout the day. Now, Remy, I know you've been taking some of the Magic Mind. How has it been going for you?
It's been going really well, man. I mean, it really helps with that focus, especially later on in the day when you want to reach for that next cup of coffee. It's just something that helps you stay off the coffee, stay focused, stay alert. Use it really to get in that flow space when I'm just really wanting to focus and just think deeply about something. It's cool. I really liked it.
Well, that's good to hear. And Magic Mind is full of natural ingredients such as Bacopa Mineri, which is a neurotropic that helps you improve your attention span. And on top of that, the Magic Mind team create a super offer for me to share with our fan base. Go to www.magicmind.com/BarçaT and get up to 56% off your subscription for the next 10 days with code BarçaT20. Again, visit the website magicmind.com/BarçaT and use code BarçaT20 and get 56% off your next subscription. Again, crush your 2024 New Year's resolutions fully focused. All right, so last night, Barca beat Atletico de Madrid. I still call it the Wanda. I'm going to still call it the Wanda. I don't like the new name. 3-0 last night, and I would say one of the most impressive victories of the season. Joining me to talk about last night's performance is Remy Dixon in San Francisco. Remy, how's it going?
It's going very well, especially after the win we put in yesterday.
Yeah, no, it's I have here in the docs, first 30 minutes. And I want to start off with that because the first 30 minutes was kind of weird, no? I mean, especially with the news of Christensen being scratched last minute. I mean, on the news when I, or not the news, on the broadcast I was watching, they came up with that news right before the kickoff. They're like, Christensen got hurt in warmups. I was like, oh God. And Fermin Lopez got the start for him. And I almost think it's a blessing disguise. Now, I understand the first 30 minutes. I think they were just trying to find their footing in the midfield because we basically lacked that. But from the first 30 minutes, what was kind of your first sensation seeing the lineup and just kind of seeing how Barcelona were playing?
Well, with the lineup originally, my biggest concern or worry was, why isn't Fermin Lopez starting? Saw Roberto, and obviously what happened over the midweek against Napoli and his move and run. I could see why Xavi did it, but I was like, yo, Fermin Lopez has been playing well. I would have liked to see that. And then you hear Christensen gets hurt, plug for our Barca Talk community, because I found that out through the WhatsApp group. Somebody posted it and I was like, oh, wow. Yes, that was you. I was mid trying to get to my actual Peña. So like I looked at the lineup before and then got in the car, and as I got there I saw that. So yeah, I mean, play wise man, I'm not gonna lie, I did not think the game would end up the way it did.
Sure.
The first 25 minutes were horrid. We didn't even get a shot on target, or shot period, I think, but we were, as you said, we're trying to find our feet in the midfield. It looked really bad. It looked like, yeah, it could have been a game that ended up much worse.
It kind of reminded me a little bit of the recent match at the San Mamés, where we were just kind of, you know, making sure our boat wasn't drowning type of, you know, it reminded me of that. It's like, we were kind of going into the mindset is like, okay, we don't want to give up the first goal. And also we're going to hold on to dear life and just try to figure it out during the match. But eventually after the 30th minute, we were able to get some play on the left side. And especially with João Félix. And I heard something pretty funny today on one of the YouTubers I follow that talks FC Barcelona in Spanish. And he said, you know, it's one of the things you can count on. João Félix against Atletico, he's going to play amazing. He's going to be playing amazing. And as soon as he started getting that play on the left-hand side, you know, the left sideline there, we started to open up and we started to have some more opportunities. And let's talk about João Félix, because I think he's one of the most confusing, frustrating players to watch, because we know he has the talent. You know, we've seen it from a young age that he was touted when Atletico signed him and then coming to Barcelona. But again, the inconsistency we've seen throughout the season. But then last night he shows up and he kind of put it all together, and you can kind of see why teams are excited to see him. What do you think of João Félix's performance last night?
Okay. So last night I thought, one, again, was not sure why he was starting. Actually, I'm happy that he started, so we gave Yamal a break. I liked what happened over midweek with Rafinha on the left and Yamal on the right. I would like to see that play out more, but we can talk about that later. With Félix, I wasn't excited that he was starting, but I also know how he plays against Atletico Madrid. So it was what it was. I think he played well. I don't think he had the performance that would have kept him on longer than Rafinha. For me personally, I thought he played well for spurts, but it's like him in general. I do not think that he hit his potential, and or I really don't. I've asked this multiple times. I don't know what it's going to take. I thought that him coming to Barcelona, I mean, I knew it was a better move for him than for us. I think this is one of the biggest chances that he has to really try to revive his career and prove that he is that big price tag worth player. But he hasn't done that here. He didn't do it at Chelsea. It was staggering at Atletico. I'm not sure what it would take to get the best out of him. Perhaps a Mourinho team, who knows? But nobody's been able to do it as of yet. And he played well for a good bit of time this game, but I don't think he didn't light the game on fire like Yamin Lamal has done at any given time. So I thought it was a mixed bag, but he did score the first goal.
Yeah, and that is true. I'm going to give you a stat line. One total shot, one shot on goal, one goal.
And that's the thing, right? Like, I don't even remember the large parts of play where I felt like he was really just tearing up that left side. Cancelo's teared up that left side more. Rafinha tore it up midweek more. So he provided he was there and he hit the touch and scored the goal. But even when you think of players that were more active, like how Fermin Lopez keeps popping up in that like run with the long ball over the top, like how that keeps happening, where, you know, I just think my standards at this point, especially for wingers, is if a 16-year-old can grab a hold of a game against regardless of who we're playing, and really everybody can look at that player and say, that's the best player on the field, a João Félix, a Rafinha, like, you should be doing that.
Yeah, and again, when I look at his profile, I just don't know what he does amazingly, and I wouldn't know how to really unlock him. Let's say if I were to, you know, play FIFA and try to put a formation around him, I don't know what that is, because it's very confusing. He'll have moments like last night where he had the nice play where he actually scores and he had the nice movement combo with Lewandowski. But again, in these weird moments, he is trying to make runs, but the run, you know, the passing is not going over the top to him, because that's obviously not our style. But again, you're right. I mean, with Lamine Yamal and maybe Rafinha, we get better production, more chances, more speed on that side, on both of those sidelines.
Well, that's what I was going to say when you're talking about the runs over the top. He's not fast. Like, he's not like when the times that he's gotten the ball in a break position, he gets caught and then also likes to like pull it back himself and will do something with his feet. Sometimes it comes off, sometimes it doesn't. A lot of the times it doesn't. Right. So, like, for me, even though you talk about FIFA, like, the best I could think of getting out of him would be putting him left under the striker, false nine, and like, having him run off of Lewandowski or something. Like, there are a lot of players that I think could fit that. I do that often with any FIFA game I play. I put that position in there, but you lose a midfielder for that, and he's not going to give you the, like, passing I wouldn't build a team around him. That's what I'll say.
No, for sure. Do you think he needs to bulk up more?
I think if he paid more attention to his physical attributes, bulking up, getting faster, things like that, he could be a bit more useful. But that's not his profile, is kind of that light, fleet-footed, but it's just like he's not fast enough. He didn't get faster over as he got older.
Yeah.
Right?
Before we recorded, I was watching what we have here in Spain. It's called the Día Después, where they do like the after show. And it's actually pretty cool because you get to see a lot of the behind the scenes that you wouldn't see normally during the match. And they were highlighting João Félix. And, you know, one of the things they were highlighting was how Atletico were treating him, you know, before the match and so forth. And, you know, Savage especially made it like he was going to make sure that he knew that he was going to mark him and he was going to mark him physically and so forth. And I just don't know if maybe João Félix, especially with, you know, maybe by talent and scouting him, they thought that he was going to get bigger or whatnot. And he just didn't have that happen. You know, and so maybe he needs to bulk up and just kind of, I don't know, withstand those kind of hits to be able to withstand and get balanced. But again, I potentially don't even see him staying after the season just because of the cost and the production of what he's been doing this season.
Look, I mean, like him getting, even if he bulked up, it's not like he is Neymar, where Neymar could definitely have stood to bulk up, but he was still so productive. Like, he would still, like, even the amount of times that João Félix, and I think it happens most with Atletico Madrid because they'll come at him. The first game they played us with him, I thought he played better that first game than this game. But he was a menace. He got the ball, and he would try to move. They would take him down, right? That makes you dangerous. That makes you a menace in a way. I don't think I saw a lot of that this game, and I don't think, like, his – like, when you look at Bukayo Saka being played, they double team him. They take him down, but he's always coming back again, again, again. And like, if you're having to stop him every time, at the very least, he's a menace. He might not get past you every time, but he will get past you sometimes. João Félix, I didn't feel like he took the ball and did that so much that it was like, they're constantly taking him down. He's constantly getting closer and getting free kicks, right? All that to say, if we were to pay for this player, that would be one of the biggest wastes of time and money we've ever invested. Honestly, I wouldn't pay you more than 5 to 10 million for João Félix. Like, 10 is pushing it. And salary wise, like, I wouldn't pay him more than a couple hundred thousand a year. Like, he is not justified any sort of investment in him. And I think I would prefer a kid, I would prefer another 17 year old than to pay money for João Félix.
No, I would agree. I think we've seen enough. And like you said, I think more importantly, it gave Lamine Yamal basically the night off to rest, especially going into international break, which he sorely needed. Now, let's get into Lewandowski, because you sent me an article. We need to talk about this, because if this is true, I'm flipping out on this because it's so amateur hour, I feel. But there's a lot of things that you brought up, a lot of good issues on this. And that's, you know, obviously Lewandowski has been playing a lot better most recently. Obviously, in the match last night, he had 2 assists and a goal. I mean, what else could you ask for from a number 9? And, you know, and let me give you the stats of him in the last 9 matches. It is 7 goals with 3 assists in the last 9 matches. And, you know, we've talked about this throughout the season that with Lewandowski, we know what he's done. We know the potential he has to convert at a high level, and it seems to finally be clicking. And again, you sent me this article. Why don't you tell our audience a little bit more about this article before I lose my mind on this?
So the article basically was saying that Lewandowski spoke to the press saying what's changed. He was talking about why they've been playing so much better. And he said basically the intensity of practice has been up. And essentially they've just gotten more intense in practice and how they play. And that was, I think that was the gist of it, right? Like, they've just gotten more intense in practices, which, if that is in fact the case, the implications alone are crazy.
Correct.
Right? Correct. Like, I think I was saying the first implication is that they all of a sudden just realized that they needed to be more intense overall. That's weird. I'm not sure at what point in the season you just decided, hey, we should start playing better or like playing more practice. But I think the real implication for me is that I don't think this was a Xavi thing. I think what it says, and I was going to point this out when you were talking about it. Remember, I don't know if you remember seeing those pictures of like that people would show like Lewandowski at Bayern and he's all ripped, and like Lewandowski at Barca and he's like way less ripped, you know? Sure. I remember seeing those, and I think it's just echoed a lot of things that we've heard about Barca from since Pep, like way, I mean, Pep was the reason that this changed, but it seemed like it was a blip for a bit. But we do not practice as hard. We do not train as hard physically. Ernesto Valverde famously didn't believe in physical training. I don't find it hard to believe that Bayern put their players through a higher physical training regimen to keep them more ripped, things like that, than sure. we do. And I was pointing out that the conversation that Lewandowski was said to have had with the team a couple weeks ago or a month ago, when Xavi announced he was leaving, Lewandowski pulled the team into his house for dinner. There's a part of me that feels like he probably was just like, hey guys, we need to step it up.
Yeah.
We need to play harder at practice. We need to work harder. The managers, the coaching staff, they're not going to ask that of us. We need to do it ourselves. And that's speculation, but the way Lewandowski has been talking about this team in the past, to how he's talking about it now, it seems like the last couple of months there has been somewhat of a rift between what Lewandowski feels like needs to happen and what Xavi feels like needs to happen. And it seems like things are coming along towards Lewandowski now. And I'm not sure if Xavi all of a sudden was just like, you know what, you're right. Or if the players were just like, hey, we have to do better for ourselves.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about Xavi in a second because I have some things to unpack with him as well in most recent matches. But again, you know, when I hear more intense, you know, you can take that a bunch of ways, right? It's maybe pushing yourself that 5 to 10%. You know, it's not really like that you're sly tackling harder during practice. Like, to me, that's not really about the intensity per se. Maybe just the effort is a lot of it. And also just going through the drills of those, what they do in the rondas and stuff like that. But again, as you pointed out, you know, I would say maybe one of the last really good physical teams we had was under Luis Enrique the first year, you know, when we won the treble. And I think one of the things with Luis Enrique being such a fitness enthusiast, you know, he was a triathlete and all this stuff, like he brought those things and new ways on top of what Barcelona was used to. And like you said, you just named some managers that believe that in just the movement and the way we pass is good enough for the fitness because they're professionals, right? And maybe there is something to it. Maybe after that meeting, he said, look, we need to make intense practices even harder and apply that with the children, you know, with the kids and everyone else on the team. But whatever, I mean, whatever, if that is the truth to that, then that's reaping the benefits now. Because now, I mean, let's talk about the goal last night that he scored. I mean, that is a classic Lewandowski Bayern type of goal, right? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, not many number nines can kind of do that, especially you forget how tall he is, you know, to be able to be so fleet of foot, turn around, hit that angle. And again, when I always appreciate when I watch goals and so forth is it doesn't always have to be the hardest, right? It's all about angles and the way the goalkeeper, I mean, Oblak is a top class keeper, right? And the way he was kind of to pull him off and then hit that perfect angle and hit the post. I mean, it was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll touch on this and we'll come back to the, you made a point about Luis Enrique that I've been thinking about and want to follow up on, but we'll talk about that in a second. The Lewandowski goal for two things. One, Rafinha put that ball through.
Sure.
Looking like
sure,
Thomas sure. Mueller.
Yeah.
Looking
yeah.
like, you know, the thing that we've asked for a while, of like, how are they not connecting? I'm not saying this is the beginning of them connecting. I don't know what this is, but probably one of the best balls Rafinha's put in a very long time, in my opinion. The shot again, only Lewandowski. That, like, I was like, oh, it's a little bit out of the way, and all of a sudden, right? But the other thing with his play was the assist for the first goal. That's another only, like, the way he turns, the way his feet work when he gets a ball, he can turn, and sometimes it's a shot that comes off, right? Like, but he is one of the best at that. Like, you saw that turn to get the ball moving forward and then to cut back to pass it. Like, I don't think many people are hitting and spinning off the defender like that and using their foot in that way. But yeah, he was phenomenal today or yesterday. He was just,
he didn't look old. He looked spry and he picked his parts when he had to make the runs, hold up play and do that. And I think that's all I'm really asking for, because I'm you know, like when we saw with Luis Suarez, that you cannot be sprinting all the time and doing all the plays they used to do, but you can pick your moments, be as dangerous as he was last night. And like you said, you know, especially like with the second assist, I mean, that cross was beautiful. Like that's the type of cross you dream of, right in between the two defenders and right to Firmin, who Firmin's not the tallest guy, but he connected it and it was such a beauty, right? So again, maybe, you know, along with the intensity and practice, maybe he is finding his footing again, his legs again, because when I was looking at the heat map last night, he was all over the place, right? He was holding play up at the midfield, but he also wasn't wasting chances. You know, as we've talked about throughout the season, he's been clogged in the middle and not finding the space, but last night he was able to find the space. Maybe it has something to do with, you know, Atletico Madrid having their kind of substitutes, especially coming off the Champions League and having some gaps in there. But whatever, I'll take it. Gives Lewandowski confidence going forward.
So the thing with Lewa that I will say is there have only been two or three games where I was like, oh, I think he is getting old. People have been saying it for a lot this season. And I feel like I've been saying, hey, he is not getting the service. It's a different story if he's missing open sitters. There have only been two to three games where he had good service and he did not score and he missed those sitters, right? I think Lewandowski is a person that prides himself on how well he takes care of himself. I think he's a Tom Brady, Cristiano Ronaldo sure. type.
I would agree. Right?
And a player that could actively, not just could, but knows that he is still good. What's happened with Barca in the last couple of weeks or months with him is he's had to drop back because we weren't moving the ball forward. And that's why you were seeing him not getting – he wasn't getting the passes. I think even in that article he did say about the passes. He said something about getting the passes. But I will tell you, I think overall what's changed and why we're seeing Lewandowski be so productive is that we are dynamically attacking other teams at this point. The games that we've had recently, what's worked has not been – oh, Lewandowski just got faster or he's gotten better. The intensity has not been the case. It's legitimately been, we are having multiple different points of attack. Lamine Yamal is doing what he does, being dangerous. But if you look at that Napoli game, you had Rafinha on the left side and Cancelo. Both of them were being dangerous. So now Napoli's looking at, well, Yamal, when he gets the ball, he's coming at us. So we got to shift over. Now there's space over for Rafinha. Yamal hits that ball over. We see how that works, right? All of that offsets what Lewandowski does. I feel like we so often, fans, we're not looking at this and saying like, oh, the reason why you have an attacking winger is so that the forward can be open in certain cases. Because if everybody's looking at the winger, the forward's probably a good forward will find space. And it's easier to find space when there are different points of attack, right? So I feel like in the past with this team, we get the ball, we pass it through our midfield side to side. Lewandowski doesn't have the opportunity to make the runs. And when he does make the run, we're not passing it to him. What's changed is all of a sudden Kubarsi's hitting a ball from deep. He's throwing Hail Marys, not even Hail Marys. He's just locking balls. We're seeing Fermín López. Fermín could have had four goals now in the last two games just from making that run from defense to forward alone. And I think the thing is, a lot of teams are like, wait, that's not how Barca plays. So you're seeing some things that we haven't seen since Luis Enrique, the treble-winning year, when he came in and was like, oh, toward the end of Pep's run, people started figuring it out. Low block. The reason why it still worked was because we had Iniesta and Xavi and all these players that would still find ways to attack you. Enrique comes in, he's like, hey, we need to vary it up. So we'll throw in a long ball every now and then, this and the other. All of a sudden, the last couple of games, you see us looking dynamic. We're looking dangerous in all different points. And surprise, surprise, Lewandowski starts scoring more goals. You know, so I think that's what's been different. It's the dynamic way that we've been playing. The intensity is great, all that, this and the other. But Levy even says it, like he's getting more passes. And until he has multiple games where he's getting passes and not scoring, I'm not going to write him off just yet.
Well, I think those are great points, but I'm going to disagree. Mm-hmm. I really think it comes down to Xavi announcing that he was leaving and that's it. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. Because he loves saying that. He said it again last night. No, but I think it's a great point because I would say, really, like what you pointed out, I think a lot of it has to do with actually taking those counters. to, you know, especially when I think of the Napoli match, when was the last time we ever saw people driving the center, you know, like whenever, like never. We would always hold up play to wait for more numbers, but not this time. And as you pointed out, Lamine Yamal on Wednesday night, for example, you know, they were cognizant of him on the one side, so it opened up the space. But when we had to go through the middle, we drove it. And when we drove it, like what I said on Friday's episode, one of the worst things you could do in any sport is be backpedaling on defense and not knowing where to go, left or right, right? And we took advantage of those. And like you said, this is what drives me crazy, because if it's just this two things of like intensity and practice and taking counters that's leading us to improved results, it's like, how do you not see that? We've been screaming about this all season long with these moments. And so again, it drives me crazy that it's taken this long in the season to figure that out, because now that we are improving, like, I still think Real Madrid have too much of a gap for us to close. But again, we've wasted so many matches in November and December just like not doing anything, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, I think this is the core of why I just feel like I can't trust Xavi as a manager moving forward. So, I mean, what you just said about him being like, oh yeah, it's because I decided I'm leaving. Funny thing is, I feel like, honestly, all the pundits are saying the same dumb thing. Like,
yeah.
The way these pundits are like, he's been treated so poorly. Like, if you listen to any of, like, the English announcers, especially, I mean, Thierry Henry, all of these pundits are just like, he's doing such a great job and he's been treated so poorly at Barca. The reason he's leaving is because he saw the writing on the wall. There was a moment where the team was playing such bad football and we kept doing it. And I say that I can't trust it because, like, as you just said, all of this was stuff that we've been passing the ball quicker, moving the ball faster. These are all things that everybody's been saying. And it's so funny how all the same pundits that were like, Barca's predictable, Barca doesn't move the ball quickly enough, all of a sudden is now like, oh, I don't know how they've gotten so much better. Maybe it's Xavi. It's like, what are they doing differently? They're passing the ball quickly, moving the ball unpredictably. Sad thing about the whole Xavi thing is I do feel like and wonder if we would be playing this way if we still had all the available midfielders. Gavi, Pedri. Xavi's been forced into playing two attacking wingers in a more attacking formation in ways that he wouldn't have had to if he had these players. I mean, I would like to think that Xavi would have looked at Napoli second leg and gone, no, we need two attacking wingers here, and we need a Fermín López that's more attacking-minded. But Pedri, Gavi, Frankie, I think you see Yamal and Lewandowski up top with a Gavi or Pedri up there, and Gundogan, Frankie, and the other one in the middle, and we play way less attacking. So
sure.
I don't trust that when we get all those players back, I don't trust that Xavi, that I don't trust that this is because of, like, unless Xavi's master plan has been lull everybody into thinking Barca is the pony, and it's like the greatest grift of all. Because even the funny thing is, even in the first 25 minutes of this Atletico game, right, we couldn't have played worse. And like, it almost felt like, because it was such a switch, it almost felt like we were like, yes, keep attacking, think we're nothing.
Yeah, all of a sudden,
now we've put you on your ass and now you can't even think about what's happening next, right? But unless that's been Xavi's plan, I'm not.
Yeah. It almost kind of reminds me of in Braveheart when he makes the twice as long spears, right? And they're like, hold. And then they just bring it up and it's all of a sudden we just start attacking and start playing really well after the 35th minute, you know?
Yeah.
Again, I don't know. Like, one of the things that just bugs me too is, like, you know, before the match, Deco keeps being asked the question is, you know, Xavi going to stay? What's the deal? And it's like, all, you know, it's this constant background noise that's happening. And really quick, let's go into Xavi, because last night, again, he gets ejected. For what? For gesturing? Sure. I saw some people on Twitter obviously saying, like, what's going on? You know, gesturing. But again, as I told you today, I was watching the show before, and it's not just right before he gets the red. It was like an elongated 8 minutes of him just chomping at the fourth ref yet again. And I shared the tweet, right? Or the message in our WhatsApp group that under Xavi's era, Gavi has 21 yellow cards. Xavi has 15 and Araujo has 14. And on top of that, this season, one of our patrons, Carlos, shared, he said, Xavi has 9 this season, which would put him in the top 5 of La Liga in yellow cards if he was still playing. Like,
this is not even as a player.
That's crazy. And that's like insane to me because, you know, we score that really nice goal to open the, you know, open the set. And it's like, he can't even last through the match because he's always constantly barking at these refs. And again, since he did get a red card, because I thought it was a second yellow, but, you know, after looking at everything, it was a red. He's going to be missing the next three matches, which includes the Clásico after the national break, most likely.
That's crazy. I didn't even think about how long he's out for.
Yeah.
I think, like, look, I love Xavi as a player.
So I'm
not trying to be that guy, but I'm going to be real candid with you. It feels like a situation where you know how the smallest dogs bark the loudest?
Yes.
Like, it feels performative. It feels like I don't know. I want to seem like I'm really doing a lot, so I'm going to, like, do a lot. And it just feels performative. There's no reason for any of that. I'm not saying you need to be a manager, just sits there stoically and doesn't do anything. But, like, Ancelotti is not out there doing that. That's the extreme on the other end. There are middle grounds, and it doesn't have to be that you're out here constantly yelling at the ref. Since Xavi didn't do that as a player.
I know. That's why I'm baffled by this. Because, you know, usually you can extrapolate what a manager's personality is going to be from being a player to a manager, right? Like, in a way. Like, I mean, I know a very extreme example would be Gattuso, right? Like, you know, Gattuso is going to be on fire as a manager and as a player. But, like, Xavi, to me, as a player, never really – I mean, I'm not saying he was a pushover or anything. He had moments where he would get hot-headed and so forth. You know, obviously think of the Clásicos and during the Pep era and stuff. But at the same time, one of the things that was so amazing about our midfield was the class and the dignity and the air, you know, that they brought. It was never about the rough and tumble that Madrid's midfield was all about for the most part, you know. And again, I just – like, a referee's not going to call every foul. Like, I don't understand. And also, what's the gain? I put in the WhatsApp group, I was like, he's yelling – and in the history of football, a ref has never come out and is like, oh, yeah, you're right, Xavi. Let me overturn that call. Let me get that over there. It's like, what are we doing here?
But it's even like after you get the first yellow, you don't then think this is a really big game. I have big games coming up. Like,
exactly.
Honestly, you're talking about him as a player, and it's like he had the quiet confidence as a player. He always knew he was extremely confident in what he could do regardless of what the ref was trying to do. And I think that's the difference with him being a manager. He is not as confident and or he's aware that there are inadequacies that, like, there's a part of me that feels I'm not going to sit here and say I think the players have fully mutinied or this, that, and the other. But there is – I don't think it's far-fetched to think that the players have upped their own intensity, have upped their practice intensity, and have – started actively saying, hey, we're going to move the ball quicker. Like, I there's nothing that tells me that Xavi all of a sudden was just like, oh, you know what, Cubarsí? Fermín's open. Hit him with that ball. Like, I gave him credit against Getafe because I said this was the first time I've seen Xavi himself make what seemed like a plan and prepared these boys when they came out. Getafe was playing the high line. And from minute one, we were putting the ball over the top. That's the way to play that kind of play, right? There was a game 5 months or 3 to 4 months ago. I can't remember. But, like, oh, it was it Las Palmas? I think it was. The team whose goalkeeper has the most touches. And it's like they played a high line. And it took us till the, like, 30th minute before we started exploiting it in a way that made it feel like the players at some point just decided we're going to exploit this. It didn't feel like Xavi was out here like, hey, like this is, I mean, Las Palmas came into the game with their goalkeeper having the most touches out of any goalkeeper in all of Europe's leagues, which clearly means that they play a high line. He's always up. For us to have not gone into that game from minute one, like we did Getafe playing the ball over the top. That's crazy to me. It says that you weren't prepared. So for me, I can't imagine that all of a sudden Xavi is like, hey, the way for us to play is dynamically. And if it is what's happened, then why did it take you so long?
Well, I think you brought up the point. It's mainly, I think, because of the injuries that's happened to our midfield, that he's been kind of forced to reconcile what's happening with our team. And, you know, he kind of fell into this idea of trying to be more aggressive because he had to, because he knew we had to give up possession.
That's like, true.
I think you made a great point earlier about, you know, if we had the full team healthy right now, he's probably using Lamine Yamal, Lewandowski, and Gavi up top to have more possession. And therefore, we lose that dynamic ability that we've been having these last couple matches. The thing that kind of just irks me again is that it's international break. And so I don't know if we can attach more matches after this international break. You know how we always come back from international break? We always come, you know, we always come because these poor guys, they don't get a break. Yeah. They got to keep playing.
Sluggish, become tired.
We got important matches coming up. You know, as I said, Las Palmas, Cadiz, they should be okay on paper, but we know this season. And then you have a Clasico, and then you have Champions League right after. So, you know, I would love, you know, just like we talked about earlier in the season with the 4-0 win, like, I feel like this feels more, as you like to love to say, more sustainable for our attacking and goal scoring right now in this moment, because I just think we found a couple things that have really helped us. And this is going to go to my last point for our conversation today is La Masia, or as I've been seeing on TikTok, La Masia. That drives me crazy when people can't pronounce it correctly. La Masia just producing yet more gems. Cubarsí, Fermín, now Fort. And it's like, it's just like, and so my question to you, just to kind of finish our conversation today, is, you know, as we talked about the João Félix contract coming up and so forth, and PK speaking out recently that, you know, Barcelona should rely more heavily on La Masia product because it's a cheaper salary and we still get it. I really think that we really need to lean more on La Masia for the next 2 years. I'm all aboard. If Laporta says, look, we are in such a deficit, but we need to use La Masia salaries and so forth, you're telling me that Culés wouldn't be on board with that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think I remember seeing that and was like, yes, I fully believe it. I think that it's one of the more frustrating things because it's hard to see this board not trying to go after a big name. I mean, you see the Kimmich stuff and all that.
Yeah.
Arguably, people could say, hey, get a good center defensive mid and then build from La Masia. Fair. All that's great. Regardless of what, Real Madrid has saved money. Like, they made really good purchases. I hate to say it, but I've been saying this. They bought players that were on the cusp. The Camavingas, the Aurelien Tchouamengas.
They bought
Tchouamengas for like sub 30. For around the same. And those players are easily going to be 100 million transfers if they were to ever go. Right? So why are we not finding I think there are multiple players out there that are mid-range. I would say if we could hit that sweet spot of finding 10 to 20 million only to give the young players rests, right? But building from La Masia forward is the way to go. We don't need to be spending. And I think if you were to look at a lot of these prospects in La Masia, like, you could tell them, hey, we want to sign. The club is in a dire strait right now. You're 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. You're still making good money for your age. You don't need a major contract. You don't need to go to a Chelsea where you might get paid a lot, but like, you'll burn out very quickly, right? What we can do is you can be one of the faces of the new Barcelona. You can help bring this team back. All we're going to ask of you is that you don't do what Elisha Mariba tried to do, which is, oh, I'm going to try to get as much money and look where he's at. I mean, I hate when people say that and I hate saying it, but realistically, like, that's what happened. He wanted a bunch more money. And I'm not saying for any of these other young players, but what I would be doing as Laporta right now is saying, hey, we need all hands on deck on this club right now. Any culé, you grew up loving this club. If you play here, we need you to stay and help us rebuild. If you've played here in the past and you have great ideas, we need you to come. We need you to help figure it out. Honestly, I think if I were Laporta, I'd go to Pep and be like, hey, you've done it. You've won everywhere. But can you bring this team back? That's the greatest trick you could pull. Can you bring a Barca back from the brink, coaching young prospects? That's what I would do.
I mean, just think about the players we've basically discovered or, you know, unveiled this season. You know, Balde, Fort, Cubarsí, Fermin, Lamine Yamal. I mean, what I want to say is I'm not saying they have to all be stars, right? But they're going to be all what? Better than sixes, 6.5s, yeah. You know what I'm saying? And that's good enough for us in La Liga, you know? And to me, I think we need to really find that balance. Like when I look at this roster, I'd be very content with staying with Lewandowski next season, Gundogan, Frankie de Jong, and then just kind of sprinkle everyone else, you know? Like Koundé, could we sell him to get something? Sure. And then we just plug and play a La Masia product over there and give them the chance. Because if it's really about saving the club financially while we develop the Camp Nou, like it has to be done. And on top of that, you're building basically, again, a La Masia 11 like we did under Pep. And that's something really like, not only is it like proud as Kool-Aids, we love that, because I still can't get over this, Remy, is that every club would kill for just one player to come through the academy to start, right, and to shine, let alone five in one season. After last season, you had other players, you know, and so that to me is, it is such an amazing feat, you know, especially, you know, when we talk about sports and scouting, and especially, for example, the NFL draft is coming, and just listening to the numbers with the NFL draft with all the measurements and the tape they have, and they're trying to scout 21-year-olds, mm-hmm. you know? And mm-hmm. La Masia seems to hit at a 80 percentile with 14-year-olds, which is crazy, you know? Yeah. Because there's so much variance of, you know, growth and age and speed and different things like that. But the most important thing with the DNA, as we always say, is the reason they can plug and play is because they understand the philosophy through and through. And maybe it's a matter of the physicality, right? Maybe they're not as fast as the older players and so forth. However, they understand the philosophy and they understand the spacing of what happens. And so they always are going to be, to me, a better fit than a transfer player that comes and doesn't understand Barca philosophy.
Absolutely. And I think it's interesting to remark on the fact that for the last couple of years, the senior team has not really played the philosophy that those young men are taught. Somehow our youth prospects understand the Barca way better than any of our senior players or any of the senior managers has been able to communicate to our players, right? Those kids don't come in here being like, oh, the only way to play is to pass it side to side for 90 minutes, hold 80% of possession, but never take shots on goal, things like that. These kids they're built different. They're taught differently in some way. So whatever the disconnect is, our senior team needs to understand that. But you're right. There are players that I think we could get rid of. I have a soft spot for Koundé. I do.
So do I. Remember when we saw him last year, he was one of the best guys out there. Remember we were pointing. I mean, it's like, and it's crazy. I cannot get that out of my mind. I just cannot get that out of my mind. Yeah. And we saw last season how good he was. And when we saw him in person, it validated that. And so to me, the way people just throw away what he could be for us, I'm not part of that.
It's wild to me. I mean, even if you're just this, the sad thing with Koundé is he's such a good right back. Like, the way he understands when to go, when to stay, the way he defends. I mean, I think the issues he's had this season, the fall dip in form is one, a lot of players dip in form, but two, I think a lot of that is Xavi inflicted. But you take all that away, this man has potential like no other. And the fact that he could slot in right back when he needs to, I still think at center back, he's very good. But for me, if I'm building this wide out for next year, Araujo's not going anywhere. Koundé's not going anywhere. Cubarsí's not going anywhere. Font, Cancelo, he's like, he's weird because sometimes he's good, sometimes he's not, you know? And like, I don't know.
I wouldn't keep him.
I wouldn't either.
Just for salary.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. I wouldn't keep him because of salary. There are players that I would definitely let go due to salary, but you're right. Like, there are ways we can build this team moving forward. I think that what you were getting at with the, like, with our keeping our youth, right? We have this thing where it feels like because we've sold off so many assets of the team, we need to win and win now. Yeah. But that's not how you build forward sustainably, because winning and winning now means you're going to keep getting these older players that are proven but come with a higher salary. Maybe you got them for free, but they still cost in terms of salary. But then they come here and they maybe not perform as well as one of these younger players does. And now you're left in a weird position, right? I will say one of the things that our form has just keeps pushing into my head the last couple of games is there is a squad here. There is, if you were to keep exactly as is next year, you don't bring in anybody new. Maybe you get rid of a Inigo Martinez or a Romeu. Like if you cut up, if you look, take some people off, Marcos Alonso, take some people off for salary, but you don't bring in anybody new except a new manager that like has a better mentality on things. This squad is good. This squad is, managers in Europe would kill for this squad. A lot of managers in Europe would have us neck and neck with Real Madrid, if not above them, because we've lost some stupid games. We've dropped silly points that we never would have or should have. And our, like, I've been saying this to a bunch of people, where we are in the Champions League right now, we're in a weird position where this team is equally capable of beating a really good team 5-0 or equally capable of being demolished. I don't see a middle ground. Like, maybe we'll see the middle ground with PSG. Maybe they beat us over the two legs, like 3-2 or something like that. But at this team's best, with the current players we have, even, and funnily enough, with the injuries we have, we could actually still beat a PSG 2-1, 3-2, or something of the sort, or get demolished.
No, I mean, this is the thing, you know, like when we talk, there is a squad here, you know, that's the thing. I would say, you know, with the improved and more consistent performance of Fermin Lopez, I mean, how do you not get excited about his play? Like the way he's able to find gaps all around is for like when I look at, you know, just football intuition, he finds those gaps, right? And I love that. I love how he's able to do that. And his scoring will come. But he's so young still, right? He's going to miss some chances. But he's been like over the weekend against Napoli, how great was that goal? The one-time finish, you know? And he was able to take that. And, you know, that's those are the things that really.
Or eight in the last like 2 to 3 games, if he finished all his chances, the balls that have been, how is he getting into that position with that ball from Cubarsí all the time? He's so good at getting into position.
It's because they got the mental link because they've been playing since they were 12 together. That's, you know, they just know they just get, they give the Catalan smile, you know, and they just go the other way.
I think it's like seeing that ball. That's one of the most beautiful things to me. Probably one of the best things I've loved about watching this team the last couple of weeks is that ball being played over the top. One, it's executed so well. Two, it's done by a center defensive mid or a center defender. But three, like the amount of times that you would see that run 2-3 months ago, and that ball would never go there.
It would
go right to Frankie, who puts it right back to Cubarsí, and then Cubarsí passes it to Pedri, and then Pedri passes it to the side to anybody who's on the wing there. For some reason, I almost forgot our left back who's hurt right now. Starts with an A. What am I doing?
Balde.
Alejandro Balde. Yes. Long day. It's been crazy.
It's all right.
You know, like, seeing that ball played over the top gives me so much hope for moving forward. And the only thing that brings me back to reality is like, would that have happened if we had all the players available?
Yeah, but you know, sometimes that's how it works. You know, I mean, you think about the iterations we've had with, you know, our top 11, you know, going through the last 20, 25 years. And, you know, injuries is a part of that. It's about opportunities and that happens, you know, just a part of the game. Now, you know, obviously we don't want to see, you know, Pedri and Frankie de Jong getting these injuries because they're so vital. We'd like to see them play and so forth. But again, having the backbone of La Masia is just, it's such a luxury that we're able to, I mean, think about any other team. Imagine we were, you know, even Athletic Bilbao, for example, you know, Athletic Bilbao right there and they miss one of the Williams brothers. It's, you clearly notice that, you know, you clearly notice those things. And so our team, you know, obviously we have the wage and we're able to afford depth and so forth. But you think about it, we're going to get Ferran Torres coming back. That's another person we can get in there. But more importantly, I just really think it's kind of, you know, if it is the intensity in practice, great. But on top of that, I think the biggest game changer in the last couple matches has just been to really push the gas pedal on those counters when they are. Because again, you know, we've seen us being so static, you know, and you think about the first goal, you know, it was on a little play where Gundogan gets through the 1-1, breaks loose, and we get through there, you know, and that just opens everything up. And like you said, you know, the long ball passing from Kubarsi is just something so beautiful too, because it's not a get out of jail type of pass where he's just trying to clear out of danger. He's like actually looking up, finding the space, and more importantly, finding to feet of whoever he wants to do it, right? It's not just like a guess or a hail, like you said, a Hail Mary type of pass, like we often see with center backs in like the Premier League, for example. They're just chucking it up there and hoping their wingers are going to get to it. Again, that's the thing that I love about with these youngsters is you see the intuition, the IQ that happens with all these plays. And maybe that's just the next unlocking of this team, is to break up through the middle with these kind of medium to long balls on top of going and using the wings.
Yeah. I mean, it is a dynamic play. And you, as you were pointing out, the counterattacks, so key. The amount of times we would see us start a counter in like 3 months ago and then pull the ball back to pass it backwards for some weird reason. I can't get over this question of like, what's the reason? Who's telling them to do that?
Yeah.
Because you're not going to tell me these professionals will see a run, know they can put the ball there, and then in their own heads are like, no, we should hold possession. I come back to the Xavi's comment before the last Clasico. We aim to dominate possession. And I remember being like, shouldn't we be trying to win? I think that was the most, if I had to take what is, I think, Xavi's most biggest philosophy is dominate possession, not win, hold the ball. But it seems like now we're in a situation where, for some reason, who knows what it is, but these kids are just like, forget that. I'm going to get the ball up. We're going to keep going. When we get the ball, it's a counter. We're going to keep going. You have a player like Yamal who has no stop. Like, he's intelligent as hell. There's no, it's not just he's fast or this, that, and the other. I don't even think he's as fast as like I've seen other players. He just has no stop. He knows how to get past people, but he will keep going. He'll keep going forward unless he needs to pull it back. And that's the difference. There's no, it feels like the limiters have been taken off. There's no like, oh, like pull the ball back. You know, it's open it up. Like car wise, it's just like, hey, there's no like, you know, we have a Ferrari and we're not driving it like it's a Taurus. Like for some reason now, all of a sudden it's just like, you know what? Flat out, hit the gas, let it go.
I mean, think about, we'll just end on this. Think about when you played and you were practicing and so forth, or even an indoor or whatnot. Like the last thing you would want to do is hold up play waiting for the defense to catch up to you, you know?
Yeah.
You have a numbers advantage. You're using your improv of like, you're going to try to break left or whatever. And this is just like on a basic football level, let alone that you're a professional. Like defending is so hard. Like, it's so hard to defend. Yeah. As an attacker, you have a clear advantage. So take advantage of those opportunities, especially when you're world-class like the players we have. So
I would love for somebody to do the numbers on the counterattacks, just focusing on counterattacks from like 3 months ago to now. And just seeing, because I think there would be a stark difference, as you've been saying. Like, I think there would be a very strong difference. I would love to see that. I mean, again, hopefully – we continue to play this way. If it is a change in mentality from Xavi as the manager and this is what's been happening, that's great. I don't think it is, but like, I will still say that I don't know if I could trust that given another year, another season.
Yeah. I would agree. Again, it's going to be telling coming back from international break, which we're having right now. So anyway, we'll close there. I'm going to record on Friday. I'll probably pick some topics, some Femini to lift some more positivity, because the Femini keep killing it as well. 7-0 over the weekend. Mm-hmm. You know, when we watch every time, I always think back when we were watching the match last year and how impressed we were with Graham Hansen. And again, Graham Hansen, Lamine Yamal, and those right wings, the way they're just decisive just makes all the difference when you were able to do that. I mean, it's crazy, and the Femini just keep killing it. And again, it just sucks that international break is right now, because now, you know, we've seen through our eye test recently, we want to watch his matches now. It's like
I would say, like, keep enjoy what's happened, Barca fans. Like, I know how negative I feel like I've been sometimes, and how it wears on me, because I love this club, and I'm like, It like when I feel like the best football I might see a weekend is my second team. Like yeah. it's just like, oh, I don't. Yeah. I don't. But yeah, enjoy it. I will say one plug before we leave though. Ashisha Oshawala scored the first goal in Bay FC history over the weekend, and it was a 1-0 win against Angel City, and she got the inaugural goal for the new San Francisco women's NWSL team.
Nice. Really quick, did I ever tell you that I went to the first MLS game ever?
No, you didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
What? That's wild.
You ready for this? The San Jose clash against DC United at Spartan Stadium in San Jose State.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll never forget because who scored the first goal ever for the San Jose Clash? None other than USA's biggest international star, Eric Winalda.
I feel like I know it's Eric Winalda. That's crazy. You know, it's so wild to think of where San Jose Earthquakes are now.
I know.
Like they're MLS dynasty, like history.
I know. When I it was one of the things after the World Cup that San Jose got one of the franchises, and of course we were like flipping out because the World Cup was just in San Francisco in 94, and then I think it was 96 was the first match.
Yeah, 96, yep.
And you know, I was like, oh my god, football soccer is gonna take over the US. No, false. But anyway, I always remember that as a iconic moment. It was a nice goal, actually, to be fair. When all the curled it in, and it was like, I think in the 80th minute or something. So it was a game winner, and it was cool. It was cool. Good football memory there at San Jose State, you know, but it's super random. Cause you know, the Spartan Stadium is so small. Like I think it was 20,000 people or something.
I mean, it's also crazy. Like, you know, that this goal was history, and it's great to see that it was done by an ex Barca player. But also that it happened in San Jose again, essentially. So, you know, I'm keeping an eye on Bay FC.
That's cool.
Is one of my favorite players.
Where are they playing?
They play down at whatever it's called now, but the Earthquake Stadium.
Oh, okay.
They didn't play there. Oh, they played. Oh, I'm sorry. This was at BMO Field, so it wasn't in. So they haven't scored their first goal at home yet. This was in LA, but
gotcha.
Yeah, but I mean the new team is moving forward, and they've done some big things. They broke the record for a woman transfer. With a Real Madrid player that they got. So
I'm just to end on this. I'm really, 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 really curious on the manager of the Femenil going to your, because it's kind of one of those things where, you know, we've talked about it. We wish he was staying at the Femenil just to continue to roll up those trophies and be in the dynasty. I think he's going to be in for a shock. Not, I think two ways. Just the football culture, obviously, or lack of, you know, just compared to every other sport in the States, and also just culturally in the States, you know, I think because he's going to be on the East Coast, maybe that's a bit easier for a transition. But man, I think he's good. I don't know, man. I hope he doesn't show up and just lays an egg. You know what I'm saying? And I wonder how good his English is. I know he's been taking classes. But again, you know, he has a lot of prestige. He's been with the Femenil for the last two seasons. He's been rolling. But again, we've talked about this before, we want him to stay just to keep rolling that dynasty. You know, love a dynasty.
Love a dynasty. We have a couple to catch up on as a Femenil. But the interesting thing I was thinking about this weekend was like the NWSL is kind of doing the opposite of what the MLS is doing, where they're getting older European players. The NWSL is getting like younger players, European players, and I don't know when we're going to see it, but it seems like they're really starting to putting money behind it. There are these big ownership groups now that are coming in and putting money in behind these teams. And if they're starting to break transfer fees already, and you know how the US is about quality and everything, they're going to start trying to put higher money into things. You can start seeing teams in the U.S. Like, I would love to see how FCB Femenil would match up against the best NWLS team right now. But I think sooner than later, many years back, I would say every European league had just better teams. I still think the Liga F has a lot to be desired from, like,
sure.
team. So how often are we really getting tested? That's going to be a problem for us. Obviously, we still see us dominating in the Champions League, but I say all that to say, it's going to be interesting to see where they start matching up. U.S. women like league play versus European Women League play and how those leagues start stacking up.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think it's going to be it. This is always going to be the push pull is you have the classic European teams with feminine teams, you know, opposed to these American teams, right? That doesn't have as much of the background and culture compared to what we have here in Europe. So I think that's going to be the big thing. And obviously money talks, right? Because if you can bring players in, and I would say also like the next thing too, is they had just to match the seasons of the rest of the world. I mean, that's one of the things that MLS is clearly lacking right now. Like what I was just seeing Inter Miami with the tournaments that they're in. It's like, they just came out preseason where the rest of the world of, you know, South America, Central America already in the middle of their season, you know? And I think that's the next step for MLS to take a big step forward. Because again, with the transfers and especially like this summer, for example, you know, with all the tournaments happening this summer, what does MLS do? You know, they lose half of their players, you know, and it's crazy. Like until that happens, then they can be starting considering a real league, in my opinion, because you can't have your own timing because you don't want to compete with American football. I'm sorry. Like,
you start seeing those own players being like, we know that Messi's going to start being injured the couple of months before any Argentina game, right? Like,
of course,
you're going to start losing those players. And also, you don't have any stakes still. Relegation isn't there. That's a different story, but I fully agree with you. Like, as far as these bigger players that are playing, even the younger ones, like the Almeidas at Atlanta United, they're going to start, like, pulling out so that they could play for Argentina in a game that actually
matters. Of course. Of course. Really quick, before I go, did you see the Nike release jerseys today?
I saw a couple of them. I haven't seen all of them. They looked dope.
I mean, they're... for me, the Dutch one is still like, I love it. The Dutch one so much. I'm not a fan of the team. I just love the uniform. It's an orange with a black collar with their scudo. And also I did like the French one too. I have a soft spot for the French. I don't know why.
Maybe because I
love their food. You know? I love cheese.
I mean, I've always liked the French team.
It was funny over the weekend. I went to a, watch rugby because a bunch of my friends from England love rugby. So we went to go to a French bar to watch France against England. And rugby is very like happy-go-lucky, right? Like they are competitive with each other during the match, but it always ends up in like, oh, it was a great game, you know? And it's really cool in that way with rugby. And it was so funny because after every point or try that was scored with France, the guys in the bar would start singing the national anthem. And to me, it's one of the best national anthems. So I never got tired of listening to it. So it was quite a fun experience, but I have a soft spot for France. I don't know why. I have no idea why. But yeah, so check out those new jerseys. The Adidas ones too are really cool, especially the Mexico one away, the Spain away, I think, and the Italian aways. They were all pretty dope. I like the three stripe logo for Adidas with like no circle around or anything like that. I thought that was pretty cool. But again, Remy, I totally forgot that there are summer tournaments this summer. And I am it's like Christmas because I feel like when the World Cup, you know, during Christmas, which was so freaking weird, you know, and now we're getting back to normal with the summer tournament. Mm-hmm. Like I totally forgot that it was European summer. And I love European football in the summertime here. It is something else.
I wouldn't doubt that it's so dope in Spain. Yeah, I mean, I think like the jerseys, I'll say the Dutch jerseys are always cool. Nigerian jerseys have always been the hitters. Like those, for some weird reason, I don't know what it is about Nigeria specifically, but those jerseys are always so hot. And I feel like they've pioneered like dope jerseys moving forward years ago. Oh, I mean, yeah, they've always been doing it, but
I think it's because of the color, you know, like, you know, obviously the jerseys are represented with the flags, but you know, I think especially I remember specifically in the 90s when they came to one of their first World Cups, because it's the green flag, it's hard to ignore, you know, it's really hard to ignore the brightness of the green. And they've done a really good job with Nike recently with the different iterations of those jerseys. I'm looking at it. It's pretty good. Yeah. It's bright green. Like you need a battery pack.
They've had a couple of those. Man, football summer is going to be great. Hopefully, Cubarsí and some of these other new younger players aren't overused by Spain. I think that's the biggest fear that every Barca player over the international break. I don't understand how the club isn't just like actively like, hey, you can call them up. That's cool. But if you play them over like 10 minutes, we're good. Like there has to
I think it's so weird because I feel like, okay, if you're the Spanish national manager, okay, like I get that Cubarsí's been having a revelation of the last five matches, but to me, I would still rely on the other players right now that I think are going to be more, I want to say dependable just because of their history. It has nothing to do with what I think Cubarsí is, but again, like you said, the manager of Spain is bringing everyone in, all the youngsters, you know, and I don't trust his manager at all. I think he's garbage, especially after how he supported Rubiales and so forth. I think he's, but also like he has no track record. Like, yes, he won the, I don't even remember the last tournament, the fake tournament that there was.
Confederations or something?
Yeah, yeah, whatever. Yeah, yeah. And sure, like whatever. But anyway, I got to go to bed. It's, I know we can talk forever. We always talk a lot, but Remy, thanks for joining me, and we'll catch up after the international break, and we hope to see more of the same run from Barcelona. Exactly. Everyone have a good week, and we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barça.
Forza Barça.
Podcast Network.